The Business on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Ulster Bank. For when you want business experts that get to know you, not just your business, visit ulsterbank.ie/businessmatters.
Taoiseach Simon Coveney has warned that a no-deal Brexit is a lose-lose-lose situation for the UK, Ireland and the EU. Yesterday evening, on the government published emergency legislation to cope with a no-deal scenario and said it hoped the bill would never be enacted. To look at what exactly a no-deal scenario looks like for us and possibly for businesses up and down the country, we're joined by Liz Fullan, CEO of Sales Optimise, Sue O'Neill, who's chair of the Small Firms Association, and Jonathan McMillan, manager of the Brexit unit in Enterprise Ireland. But first, earlier I caught up with two people whose businesses could be affected in ways you might not expect. Tina Buckley first runs Graham Anthony Distribution, and it imports skincare products, many of them from France and continental Europe, and it sells them through the Irish and to the Irish and UK markets. And I asked her what a no-deal crash out Brexit would mean for her.
Well, we were hoping, obviously, that it wouldn't happen, but now we really are in the preparation for what is going to happen maybe on the 1st of April. So with cosmetic products, because they are something that's used externally on people, they have to be safe, they have to go through all the regulations, safety reports, and at the moment this happens through Europe. So there's one portal in Europe that collects all this information. The manufacturer would have a responsible person that looks after the health and well-being of everybody who buys the products. So if there's any issue with a product or an ingredient or anything like that, it's the manufacturer, because they're based in Europe and because we get our products from France, that looks after it. But now, because the UK, Britain will be a third country, from the 1st of April, you know, from the minute it happens, we have to have labels on our products with a UK address. So we have to have a UK entity with a responsible person employed to look after all of this.
So that would mean you'd have to relabel and repackage all of your products?
Yes. We are talking about, at the moment, about 400 retail products. But that's different references, but the amount we send out a month would be about 25,000 to 30,000, and it's increasing.
Units a month?
Yes. So that's a lot of work for labels to go on small products.
Are you going to be able to do this? Is it a bridge too far in terms of cost?
Yes. In terms of manpower costs, we'll have to employ staff. We were hoping maybe that the French would be able to do it first, the manufacturers themselves. We've different ranges of products. One of the companies said they might be able to do it. But in general, we have looked at the different options. We are going to probably have to do it ourselves. We're supposed to have this all done before the 1st of April. But we don't want to go to the expense of getting all this done and then maybe, hopefully, nothing happens and we're all okay.
Well, we're all hoping we'll be okay.
Yeah. But you have to have something in place to prepare for what's going to, you know, happen.
Tina Buckley from Graham Anthony Distribution there. Well, I also spoke to William Carney. He runs Thermodial, an air conditioning and refrigeration maintenance firm, and it relies on access to fridge gas. I asked him what his issue is.
The quota for fridge gas is the UK and Ireland are joined together. And the problem is the UK are saying they're going to keep their quota. Now, this is recycled gas that you use in an existing plant.
And your business is involved in air conditioning maintenance, so whenever in refrigeration and air conditioning systems, they need this gas. And when you do the maintenance work, you need to have gas to put into them. Otherwise, they won't work.
Correct. And the problem is that this has implications not just for the air conditioning business, it has implications for the transport business because of refrigeration there and also the food business.
And you're saying that the British industry is saying that after Brexit they won't be obliged to share their quota of this gas with Ireland. And have they said they won't be sharing?
They have said, verbally they have said it recently, but the problem now is nobody knows what's going on, and that is the biggest problem. And we only have 3 weeks to go. The gas is made in Europe, but the problem is it's bottled in the UK. So all the gas comes through the UK for Ireland. So we have to depend on the UK.
What about the implications for food, for refrigeration, for all of those things? If there wasn't enough of this gas available, we wouldn't be able to chill that stuff?
Correct. And the problem is that type of system is more prone to leak than air conditioning. So if you take your average truck has a refrigeration system, how do you transport your meat if you can't refrigerate it?
What would it mean for your business?
For us, critically, we do maintenance on, say, data centres, right through to other critical plant hospitals, retail. So it has major implications for everybody.
William Carney of Thermodial there. So I'm joined by Liz Fullan of Sales Optimise, Sue O'Neill of the Small Firms Association, and Jonathan McMillan, manager of the Brexit unit in Enterprise Ireland. You're all very welcome to the programme. Liz, we've heard a couple of unusual examples there of how businesses might be affected in ways they mightn't have seen coming by a crash-out no-deal Brexit. What you do is you put businesses together with other businesses in terms of finding suppliers and finding customers for what they do. What are you seeing, and what kinds of products do you think we could run into short-term problems in sourcing?
What I'm seeing is that, especially in the logistics sector, they didn't take it really that serious in the UK that a no Brexit was going to come. And now what's happened in the last 4 weeks is that a little bit of panic is now setting into logistics and shipping. And what you're seeing is 80 to 90% of the warehouses in the UK are rapidly filling up. Now, how does it impact the consumer? Two things to think about would be Amazon, where we all shop online every day today, added the top 50,000 sellers on the Amazon UK store, 31,000 are foreign companies. How are they going to get their product into the UK? And then how are they going to get their product from the UK to us?
What about in the short term, if there was a crash out no deal and there were tariffs and there were customs issues and there was bureaucracy, there could be delays in delivery of I presume certain food products, certain pharmacy type products.
Yeah, so you definitely will have an impact. I used to work in customs, so when you import product from a third country, which is what UK could become, you'll find shortages in certain types of product like cereals. All cereals are predominantly produced in the UK by Kellogg's, Nestle, and then delivered to Ireland. So I don't know how we will deal with those delays getting basic products in. Baby food is another classic example. Irish brands that we thought were Irish are not really Irish anymore. They were bought by internationals. So you're looking at the likes of HP ice cream, Lion's Tea,
and some of our biscuits. I presume as well those companies will have their own Brexit plans that they're working on, but there's certainly uncertainty around how this might play out. Jonathan McMillan, panic in the logistics sector in the UK, where companies are suddenly becoming aware of this as a reality. Is that what's also happening in Ireland? Are you seeing that?
I'm not sure there's panic, but there's certainly a real increase in the last number of weeks in terms of our companies who are engaging with us. Just as a brief example, we have a Prepare for Brexit website that has all our supports, all the events, and lots of insight for companies across the issues like supply chain, strategic sourcing, customs and financial management. Our engagement in that website with our Irish companies has increased tenfold in the last 3 months. So there's certainly a lot of companies, Irish companies out there now, who are engaging are taking action.
Are you seeing UK companies looking at your website as well to get a handle on what might happen?
We are, and we do track that. And of course, it's in our interest that UK companies, whether they are our customers or our suppliers to our Irish companies, are prepared for what's going to come at the end of March. I'll give you just an example. I was talking with a company just this week up in the Northwest. They are really concerned. They've done the analysis that we would be working with them on in terms of identifying really strategic suppliers that they need to keep supplying them in a just-in-time basis to keep the lights on. So they've identified those suppliers. And then the second piece we would recommend is that they engage with that UK supplier. So they went, they quizzed them, they really challenged them on what implications that this might have for their business. But that UK company has assured them they have done the customs simplifications needed. They've increased their stock holding. They're looking at setting up a Eurozone base to supply the Irish company in. And in that case, that gives us reassurance. However, we also spoke with companies last week, Richard, who have had those same conversations with their UK suppliers.
And there was no plan.
And the UK suppliers are maybe still living in a little bit of denial. They haven't thought about these things and they haven't put in. That's whenever the companies then face a difficult choice of looking at secondary supplies or alternative supply arrangements.
So, Anil, how prepared do you believe, based on your experience chairing the SFA and all of the members that you would have, how prepared are Irish companies, small firms in particular?
Yeah, I think, with small firms in particular, I think we're seeing a real mix. We're seeing some companies that are actually quite prepared, even startups. I was talking to a startup company that has actually specifically said now they're going to exclude the UK from their export strategy. So they're, you know, from the ground up saying, okay, we'll look at Europe, we won't look at UK.
Are they worried?
A company like that is not as worried because they're starting from a base where they can say let's just park that piece. But there's other companies that are really adopting a wait and see approach because, you know, by essence, a small company can't put the resources sometimes into preparedness. You know, if you're looking at resources of customs and what ifs and things like that, it's very hard for a very small business to do that. So some of them are taking a wait and see approach, but that's not to say that they're not aware. I think we're finding with the small firms, our inquiries are becoming very specific now. You talk about what William was saying there earlier and what Tina was talking about. They're real specific questions that have been coming in.
One of the problems, and Jonathan talked about doing a supplier check with your UK
yes.
suppliers to see how prepared they are. Is it possible that in a no-deal scenario, a lot of companies will find that there are greater problems than they envisaged, and that will put them under pressure in terms of their finances yeah. and their short-term working capital? Should they be talking to the bank?
Yeah, well, my thoughts on this is that one of the biggest concerns is going to be cash flow for small business, you know, and they really need to be talking to the bank at this particular time, because what's been happening over, if we look at last year, two-thirds of businesses that we surveyed said that they would invest in their business. Now that's down from 71% the year before. So we've seen that businesses have not been going to the banks, they've been using their own funds and they're not looking to the bank for investment. So when a no deal comes and we get to the 31st of March, my fear would be that there would be a draw on those banks, and those banks won't be, you know, companies won't have had an engagement with them, and the banks also will have already got their own customers, and they will be dealing with the larger customers.
And they could leave it too late, basically.
And they leave it too late.
And
yeah.
as you mentioned about warehouses in the UK being full, many of the goods that come to Ireland from continental Europe come via the UK. I assume, though, that those full warehouses are to supply the British market and British companies. I wouldn't think they're fully stocked to get the stuff over to us, are they?
No. So you have an issue in that the land bridge is where all the stock has been moving from Europe through the UK to us. And the warehouses that are filling up in the UK are filling up for Amazon. They're filling up for the supermarkets, but they're not filling up for Ireland. So what is okay is that a lot of European fresh produce will come directly from Europe to Ireland, and the government is making arrangements for that.
But that'll produce, cost more, won't it, Liz? I mean, that's the other issue. Are the costs of consumer goods going to rise?
Costs of consumer goods will rise, because especially if you're importing from the UK and they're a third country and tariffs are applying, costs are going to go up. But back to the point you made about finance, one of the asks I have to help business in Ireland is if the government could look at the SBCI Brexit fund of 300 million. The credit criteria for a small business to apply for that is like the criteria you would have if you're no cash flow problems. Brexit wasn't happening. And less than 5% of that's being drawn down. The vast bulk of that 300 million is still sitting in the AIB and Ulster Bank, and it's locked away. And the businesses that urgently need it, that Sue's talked about, can't access it.
Jonathan, how difficult is this for small companies in particular to manage, where they have a UK supplier, let's say, for example? They might be just selling in Ireland, but they need certain goods from the UK supply. Are they thinking about severing those relationships in the future? Or are they looking at, you know, sourcing stuff just simply from somewhere else, completely severing those.
So I think all these topics we're talking about, the problem is they cost money. So if you look even at severing, it's a very severe term, your UK supplier, that's going to cost you money in terms of investing and researching and looking at alternative supply chains or supply routes. Certainly what we're telling companies is to be methodical, to work through a structured approach. We will put in, and the local enterprise offices or through InterTrade Ireland, we will put in experts to work with you as a company to work through these areas. The problem our companies are facing, whether you're a large company or a small company or a startup, is if you look at the risks, whether it's financial currency management, or you look at potential tariffs, you look at supply chain, you look at extra customs procedures, all of these things are going to cost you more money. Coming back to the financial support that's there, the SBCI support is there. We're seeing a lot of our companies going ahead now, applying for that, getting their eligibility on it. Somebody mentioned one of your previous, William or Tina mentioned, you know, maybe we have to have a wait and see. That's the worst thing any company out there could do at the minute.
Waiting
and seeing is not an option.
Okay.
You have to take action now.
Not an option, and I can see from talking to you why Simon Coveney described such a scenario as a lose. It does sound a lot like that way, and hopefully it won't come to that. Liz Fullan, Sue O'Neill and Jonathan McMillan, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.